Do you crave deep and meaningful conversations? The kind of conversations that jazz you up, stretch your mind, and leave you wanting more? Welcome to Suzanne Says, Courageous Conversations about Life and Living. I'm your host, Suzanne Bird Harris, and I talk with friends and colleagues about what lights them up, their fears and flaws, who they've been, who they are, and who they're becoming. You know, the stuff that makes and breaks us. So get comfy. Here we go. Hey, Charlene, at long last, we finally made it here. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
My first question is always to everyone that I talk to is, without mentioning what you do for other people, who are you? Who are you, Charlene?
I'm me. And
okay,
but
pretend
else.
I'm your local five-year-old, and I know what that means. So,
oh, yes. Oh, yes, the five-year-old, yes. Or the golden retriever, perhaps.
Yeah.
German Shedder mom. I've been a German Shedder mom for at least 10 years, maybe longer, in one form or another.
Mm-hmm.
I love my herders. I love my pointy-eared wonder dogs to death. They're amazing. They're smart. They're driven. You know, hey.
That's them. We're talking about you.
I know. That's what I was getting at. I was like, huh, smart, driven? Sounds like, you know, you know how the dogs kind of reflect their owners?
Yeah.
Traveler. Been traveling full-time in an RV for the past 2.5 years. Pulled out of Alexandria, Virginia, in March 2019, and haven't looked back since. Literally and figuratively. You know, just, I'm an all-around badass.
I would agree with that.
Awesome cook. I make gourmet shit happen in the kitchen. In fact, tonight we're doing sous vide steaks for dinner. I get some ribeyes in the fridge. And sous vide is, for those that don't know, it's a cooking something in a sous vide is French for under vacuum or under pressure. And basically what it is you put the food, it can be protein, it can be a veggie, it can be eggs, custard, whatever. You know, there's no limit to what you can sous vide. And you put it in a bag, you vacuum seal it, and you drop it in a temperature controlled water bath for a certain amount of time. And then it makes food idiot proof. So basically what I'm doing with these steaks is a reverse sear, which is where I put them in the water bath, cook them to 131 degrees, whatever medium rare is. The app kind of, literally, I just punch a couple of buttons in this app and it just goes to work. And then what I'll do is, once I pull the steaks out, I'll get a pan ripping hot and just do a sear on either side, let them rest for 5-10 minutes, serve. So
wow.
I do that.
I might even be able to manage something like that.
The one I use specifically is called the Joule, J-O-U-L-E. It's the smallest. There's a couple of different sous vides out there. There's Anova, there's Joule, there's a couple others. And Joule is the one with the smallest form factor, which when you're living in an RV, space is important. So it fits tucked very nicely in one of two kitchen drawers that I have. it works, and yeah, it's absolutely amazing. And even in the small kitchen, you know, I literally have 6 linear feet of counter space from one end of the counter to the other. You know, I turn out some awesome shit.
That's great. I would, you know, talk about two things that don't belong in my brain. Gourmet cooking in an RV don't go together, but you make it work.
My Joule, my Instapot are my two best friends in the kitchen. And it's a matter of just having the quality ingredients, the skill, and the tools. Like, for example, my knives I've had for 10 years. I got them from William Sonoma. They're Shun Classics, and the pans I have are higher end because I went through a period of buying a nonstick pan every 6 to 8 months, like the $20 version from the local supermarket. I'm like, all right, forget this. We went to a higher end cooking shop and found these pans called made by a company called Scan Pan. These are nonstick pans that you can put in under the broiler. You can cook them with, that's the pan I'm going to use when I get it ripping hot. Yeah, you can literally, I mean, and it doesn't flake off because the way they do, the way they make these, I guess it's a ceramic or I'm not sure exactly, but it's like, it's the coating is bonded to the metal. It's not sprayed on top. So it, yeah, if you have a broiler big enough, which we don't, you know, I can just throw it in the broiler. And because I got to the point where it was like, the money I'm spending on a pan every 6 months, I could spend it once and have a pan that's going to last me a lifetime.
When are you not going to need a pan?
So it's just a matter of just having the quality ingredients, which being in an RV, I can discover all sorts of local things all the time. Like there was one time we were up in Idaho in this little river town somewhere. I forget exactly where, but basically we discovered this butcher shop that had bison ribeyes and like these elk medallions. Those bison ribeyes were some of the best steaks I've ever had. They were grass fed, so the fat was all yellow and rich and buttery, and I did a reverse sear on them. Oh my gosh, that was a year ago. And yesterday I went down, since we're over on the Forgotten Coast of Florida right now, and I went down to the local fish market and got these local it's called a triple tail. It's just a white, light white sweet fish, and I got some grouper cheeks and did those up. I pan fried some of them yesterday. I'll probably do a ceviche on these, the rest of them. In fact, I was looking at them earlier today. I was like, oh, I'll do a ceviche with those. So yeah, I've got the lime juice. I just need to go and get, I've got the cilantro. I can grab maybe grab a shallot. And I say maybe because that's the thing about being on the road is a lot of times you have to stock up
right
in advance. Like, we went to the Walmart in Panama City to stock up because we looked at the grocery store options around here and we're like, all right, shit. So I was like, we got to go and stock up. So we did that. And if I need to, I can get, if I can't find a shallot, I'll find a red onion. Because apparently, pro tip, I heard that from another full-time RVer that I follow who just put out a cookbook, Trisha Leach of Keep Your Daydream. She said, she gave me a hot tip that apparently shallots are milder than red onions when it comes when it comes to raw. So I'm like, and I don't like the taste of red raw onions. I'll do sauteed all day long, but raw onions, forget. I'm like, oh, I'll try a shallot and ceviche next time.
Wow. Okay. So we learned a lot in that answer to who are you? That's cool. So still not saying what you do. Are you doing exactly what you want to be doing at the moment in your life?
Working on that. I am working on that.
Okay. So now let the cat out the bag. What do you do for other people?
Okay. So right now, what I've been doing for the past 10 years is web design and web optimization in some form. And I actually started on that background. I designed my first HTML website in the mid-90s. When I was still in middle school, I'd gotten to HTML. Mm-hmm. So I've been doing that for, oh God, better part of 20, 30 years now almost.
Yeah, I started years. In 83.
Yeah. That was like midnight. Yeah, like I said, 93, 94 for me probably. And so did that in, started out in middle school, you know, got into high school, did the GeoCities thing, did the Angel Fire thing in college and the LiveJournal thing in college, you know, kind of still dabbled with HTML. And then got out of college, still was in web work. Then right around 2012, 2013 is really when I started to get into website optimization and WordPress. Started my own business in 2014 when I lived back in Maryland, a business called Trooper Boots Marketing, because I got fired from being let go from the latest office job. And I was like, fuck this, I'm going to go get clients. I'm going to start a business and go get clients. And then it took me about a year of finding my footing and figuring out, and then, kind of doing some odd jobs here and there and finding my way. And then it was like May of 2015. I went, shit, I got bills to pay. So then I put my feelers out there, looked for a job, to start actually looking for a job, because at that point I was like, well, what the fuck else am I going to do? Right.
And you weren't on the road yet in the RV.
No, I was still living on my own. I was single. My husband and I, my now husband and I, were dating at the time. We'd been dating for about, at that point, 3 years, because we started dating in like July of 2011. In fact, our first date was the Baltimore Grand Prix, which is the IndyCar, the race where they had the IndyCar and the American Le Mans series around the streets of Baltimore. That's the other thing. I'm a gearhead. Always have been. That's, again, started at a young age when you asked, who am I? Gearhead motorcycle rider. In fact, he's got 3 bikes. I have 2. I've got a Monster 796, which is an air-cooled twin Ducati. And then I have a little dirt bike, a little CRF, Honda CRF 100, little thumper that I, that I kind of screw around on. Yeah. So getting back to the job story, I took a position with a remote digital agency in LA, started as an SEO technician, learned how to SEO from the ground up at this agency, learned how to run site crawls, or learn how to evaluate site crawls, learn how to do all of that, learn kind of the technical ins and outs of SEO. And then got moved over to project management, and I project managed for about 2 years. And I had a very strong SEO background, which put me at an advantage, I found, over a lot of the other project managers, who, because they'd bring in project managers without any sort of digital marketing or SEO background. And then from there, I moved into team management, where I was managing the team of project managers that were under me. And then January of 2020, too many J's. I, again, was let go. And at that point, I was okay with it, because honestly, about 6 months beforehand, I had sent them my resignation, and they did kind of a save the employee thing. And you know how it is when you break up with somebody and you've decided you're going to break up, and they're like, no, 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 don't leave. And yeah, I hung on for another 6 months, and I left anyway, because at the end, I just didn't give a flying fuck anymore, to be quite honest. And I'm like, okay, bye, see ya. And then since January 2020, I've been on my own ever since. And in the past, since April or May of this year, I forget exactly when, I linked up again with a former coworker of mine that used to work at the agency. And he and I really started ramping things up with us. And then he's really good. I handle more of the front end and the high level strategy sort of stuff, and some of the copywriting. And he handles more of the back end implementation sort of stuff. So all that to say that I don't really want to keep doing that. Right? I'm good at it. I can do it. And at the same time, I've also started this project. It's called Pointy-Eared Wonder Dogs. And what it is it is basically, I got a new German Shepherd puppy that was the product of about 18 months of researching breeders, researching bloodlines, researching dogs pairing specifically. So he's like kind of the ultimate epitome of what I want. And he actually had a predecessor who taught me a lot. Desmo was my first working dog. He went over the Rainbow Bridge in May of 2020 due to hemangiosarcoma. And that's honestly what spurred this search for this new dog. And like I said, I learned a lot from Desmo. And what I'm doing is I'm taking everything I learned with him and then putting it into CB, which is the new puppy, and also I'm linking up with a trainer down in Florida over the next 4 months, and she's going to give me a really good foundation. And the idea with Pointy-Eared Wonder Dogs is to chronicle all of that and put all of this knowledge that's about German Shedders specifically that's in my head out there into the world, you know, because and working line dogs specifically, because there's generic articles about how to train German Shepherds, how to, you know, nutrition and this, that, and the other. But when it comes to these working dogs, there's no real resource out there. And the working dogs are often more intense, often more driven than a pet dog.
Yeah, they're not pets. They're working members of the family.
Exactly. I mean, he's a pet in the sense that, you know, he's allowed on the couch and everything, and he, you know, he doesn't sleep in the bed, but because Jim's allergic, but, you know. But he's absolutely a member of the family. And at the same time, I am working with this trainer to learn how to channel his drives, his innate drives, without crushing his spirit, while maintaining his confidence. Because a lot of the training methods out there, and I did this with Desmo, and I'll admit that in a sense, I made a mistake. And at the same time, I did what I did with the knowledge I had at the time. So one thing I did with Desmo was I put obedience on him too early, basically. And I'm doing the opposite of that with the puppy. I mean, not to say that he gets away with murder in this house, because he doesn't. You know? When he starts acting up, I know he needs something. He's telling me he needs to go outside, or he needs to go chase the rag or bite shit or whatever. So that's kind of the difference between what I did then and what I'm doing now. And then, like I said, this trainer.
Mm. You know what? It's, I don't know from a hole in the ground, any technical anything about dog training. I've had dogs most of my life.
It's a lot like raising kids. They've been.
Well, that's what I was getting to, listening to you talk about the difference and obedience. You know, we don't try to impose obedience on 6-month-old babies either. You know, we don't do that until, you know, 2 or 3 years old, when their cognitive abilities are capable of receiving that kind of instruction. Until then, it's on you to keep them safe and out of trouble, you know? And that's what it made me think of listening to you. You're dealing with your puppy the same way you would a little kid. And for the same kind of reasons. And the same thing happens with kids when they get unruly. And Lord knows I have some experience with that. when they get unruly, they need something that they don't have. And you've got to figure out what it is, because they often can't articulate it for you.
Bingo.
Yeah. So that's cool. So, are you looking to transition into dog training?
No.
At all?
No. This is just In fact, other people have asked me. I'll be out, and I literally have a bag of treats on my hip every waking moment. Because any moment when I have the puppy is a training moment.
Yep.
Right? And I need to be ready for that. And I'll be out in public and I'll be training him, and people will be like, oh, are you a dog trainer? No. Because honestly, I don't want to train other people's dogs. Fuck that noise. You know, I don't want to train your multi-poo with shit genetics and a shit foundation, a shit puppy foundation. No, I don't want to fix somebody else's fuck up. Uh-uh. That's why I spent 18 months researching as deeply as I did.
Right.
So that's no, the idea is not to train other people's dogs. It is to put information out there, and the monetization honestly will come secondary, because right now I'm still doing the web design. I mean, I'm still figuring it out as I go along as to how the content will flow and the planning, and, you know, if I want to do like a community or a, you know, how I want to turn that into more of my main source of income. But, and, you know, it's still pretty nascent. And I mean, it's been nascent for the past couple of months, and it's just, it's one of those, right now it's kind of a side project thing, because let's face it, got bills to pay. Right. So,
yeah. And a puppy.
Oh my God. Yes.
You have a puppy. Yeah.
Yes. Puppy. Puppy takes up a lot of time and a lot of energy, and I wouldn't have it any other way. In fact, he's currently snoozing. He's sleeping and growing again.
So, do you, well, I was gonna ask if you about the web design stuff that you're doing, but I kind of already think I know the answer. Based on what you've said, is usually I'm like, when I ask someone what they do and they tell me about it, then I'm like, okay, so as a gauge of how much do you love this, would you do it whether you got paid or not? And I'm thinking web design for you is a hell no, I got to get paid.
For other people, I would do it, and I will do it for myself, for my sites, for Pointy Ear Wonder Dogs.
Yeah. And at that point, it becomes something that, how awesome is it that you're leveraging a lot of work history on behalf of something that you're really, really into and don't have to hire out? That's great.
Yeah. Jim calls me the 1% of the 1% of dog trainers.
Yeah. So dogs as a focus for so much of your time and attention, how long has that been the case? All your life, since you've been an adult, since 2012, when did this become such a big part of who you are?
I would say about the time that Jim and I started dating, because that was the time that, I got my condo. I purchased a condo in Columbia, Maryland in October 2011. Jim and I had started dating a couple of months before that. And I, even when we were dating, like those first couple of dates, I talked up and down and up and down about how I was going to get a house, and I was going to get a German Shepherd or a couple of German Shepherds. And I knew that I wanted a working dog, right? I knew I wanted a working line German Shepherd specifically. And in fact,
okay, let me interrupt you there. Why? Why specifically did you know you wanted a working one?
Because, okay, all right. So there's mainly two types of German Shepherd lines. Well, there's more than that, but we're going to keep it simple for now, for the rest of the class. Not going to get too far into the weeds, because I can do that very easily.
Yeah.
So there you got your working line and your show line, right?
Okay.
Your working line, I've had people ask me if he is a police dog. They're bigger. They're usually more of the sable or the bicolor type, and they have more of an innate drive to work, right? And I knew that I wanted a dog, quite frankly, that I wanted him to do bitey shit. In other words, I and this was way back when I was still with the ex. We did Schutzhund, or it's now called IGP or IPO, or they keep changing it. But basically, it's where the guy runs with the sleeve and the dog bites the sleeve and that sort of thing. So, and I really fell in love with that sport. So then I went the ex and I split in 2009, and then I went a few years, 2 years basically, without a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And the show line shepherds, they're a little bit more nervy. They're a little bit softer. They're a little bit more laid back. Mm-hmm. And as a single woman, I wanted a dog that was actually going to look intimidating.
Yeah.
And be protective.
And not right. only threaten, but actually be able to take a chunk of someone's ass if needed. Yeah.
Well, see, that's the thing. And getting into the live bite scenario, I don't know if... I mean, honestly, for 99% of the population, it's just the scary bark is enough, right?
Yeah.
And as as far as Desmo went, I don't know if he'd actually do what's called a live bite, where he'd actually bite flesh, right? Because mm-hmm. when they have the sleeve on or the suit on or whatever, it's a lot of times that's a giant game of tug for the dog, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
And again, it depends on the dog. And then of course there's also liability, you know, that, but no.
Yeah.
Yeah. So live bite scenario. Did I actually want him to actually take a chunk out of somebody? Probably not. I mean, and I even, you know.
Oh, no. And that. I didn't say that meaning you were going to, like, turn him loose on the world or anything. But from the single woman perspective, mm-hmm. I had a dog until she died last summer. And mm-hmm. she was a Rhodesian Ridgeback Pitbull mix.
Okay.
And that dog's bark sounded like hell.
Yeah.
Was being unleashed. And like, she did actually nip the UPS man one time. She was extremely ultra protective of us. And at the time, in the later years, it was me and Lexi, my daughter, at home. The boys were up and out. So it's a big difference now in this house without her here with us, mm-hmm. as far as how confidently safe do I feel in my own home.
Absolutely.
So from that perspective, I never wanted her to bite anybody.
Absolutely.
Really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But she absolutely would if I said, get them,
mm-hmm.
you know? And knowing that she would wait for that signal from me to do that,
mm-hmm.
Gave us a real sense of security, you know? And I've had it. I mean, Charlene, I used to be able to go to bed at night, not lock any of my doors, not one. And I'm in smack in the middle of the city of Tulsa. Not one moment did my brain worry about anybody coming in my house when she was alive,
mm-hmm.
because they'd be her dinner if they tried it, you know, and midnight snack for Cheerio. But now that she's gone, I've got an alarm system on my house. She was our security in that way. But like you, I would never want her to be so ferocious that she'd just like growl and make crazy and then, you know, actually try
be a liability,
to go after anybody.
Essentially. Yeah.
Yeah. But the potential of her knowing she could, if I said, go get him, or if I was being attacked, she'd absolutely shred somebody,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
without me having to say anything. And that I think is one of the big reasons for women, period, to have a dog.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're looking for a big dog, now I know a lot of women, like right now, Lexi got me a Jack Russell Terrier Chihuahua mix.
Those little
Christmas
dogs can be ferocious.
Year.
Are you kidding? Don't mess with them.
I know. But she's extremely ferocious and very protective of me now. And she'll nip at somebody if she thinks I'm being threatened. But let's face it, little 15-pound dog can do some damage, but is also easily mitigated. How are you different now than before you were a dog mom in such a purposeful way? How's it changed you?
It's an interesting question. I would say it's made me more responsible. I mean, in the sense that I'm not just taking care of me.
Okay.
For me, I'm taking care of me for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's also helped me to realize that not everybody has the same standards of care that I do for my dogs, and that finding a reliable pet sitter that understands their proclivities and their vagaries and this, that, and the other is, I can write a list of instructions, you know, a 10-page list of instructions, and it still wouldn't cover everything, you know, just in terms of all of the little quirks and idiosyncrasies. And
mm-hmm.
It's made me realize that since it's not just being a dog mom, but it's also getting really into the training, the psychology, the nutrition, all of that. And that was CB. He was barking at the husband outside. It has, and I mean, I even very, very recently, I've come to understand, like, as Jim says, I'm the 1% of dog trainers. Because, I mean, before I, whatever the name of the psychological phenomenon is, mm-hmm. and I operated under this delusion that I know this, therefore everybody knows it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I know that when a dog yawns, they're not tired, they're stressed. Everybody knows that, you know,
mm-hmm.
for example. And that's really in the past, I would say year. That's happened.
Do you think you are more or less patient as a result of?
Absolutely more patient and a lot less stressed now that. So before, when I had Desmo in the condo before I moved in with Jim, it was stressful,
mm-hmm.
because I was doing the single dog mom thing,
mm-hmm.
and I had roommates, and I would kind of figure, or I'd want them to take care of the dogs while I went on trips. Like, for example, like I said, Jim's allergic, so there would be trips I wouldn't bring the dogs on, like when we flew out to California a couple of times, and one time we drove out to Bonneville for him to go 200 miles an hour on the salt.
Mm.
Didn't quite make 200 miles an hour, but he was close. And every single time I did that, I was stressed about the dogs. You know, and I finally said, all right, if I can't bring them, I don't really want to go on this trip. And I haven't flown in a plane since 2017. Yeah, last time we went out to California, that was it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, I was still stressed about, we had pet sitters and people come over, and I still was stressed about their care and, are they being cared for properly, and this, that, and the other. And
so you mentioned when you were talking about the pointy-eared wonder dogs, mm-hmm. is that's what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
building a community. And that's one of the questions I like to ask people just in general. And this is not posed to you in the context of that project, but it simply that it reminded me. And I also am interested to hear the answer to this because of your lifestyle out on the road.
Mm-hmm.
What does community mean to you? How does community show up in your life? Like, I imagine a part of that answer is the group that you and I are both a part of. That's got to be some form of community for you. It is for me. But beyond that, and especially moving around and seeing the whole country from, you know, the way that you do, and you're in a different spot all the time. How does community show up for you in your life?
You know, it's funny. I've actually had this conversation with Jim in one form or another a little bit. Mostly online for me.
That makes sense.
Because like you said, it's a little too people-y out there most mm-hmm. of the time. And that's not to say that we haven't done you know, we haven't entertained people because there's been people that Jim has seen and that I've seen. You know, in fact, there's a woman by the name of Kate Ferris, and she lives up in Pennsylvania, Warfordsburg to be exact. And she, before I was into dogs, I was into horses mm-hmm. growing up. And so there was this one woman, Lynn Spock of Statesman's Morgans. She bred and trained sport horse Morgans, which are a specific subset of Morgan that's close to the old style. They're not the Morgans you see in the show ring. They're the ones that would be on the farm and the ones that would be getting shit done. Right. Mm-hmm. So Kate knew Lynn. Lynn is no longer with us. And so Kate has taken these Statesman's horses and is now continuing those bloodlines as well. So point being that we stayed at her farm for a couple of days. It was originally going to be just overnight, and then we ended up staying there twice because we just hit it off so well.
Mm-hmm.
So well. So being able to see those people in real life is awesome. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we go to when we get to the Tulsa area or Oklahoma, you'll definitely know.
Oh, yeah.
When we swing through Oklahoma, I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there is some community offline, and at the same time, for me, quite frankly, entertaining offline is more stressful.
Mm-hmm.
Because we hosted, so we went, there was a friend of Jim's in Georgia that we went to his place. And then there's always that, well, not always, but a lot of times, like, I was ready to go home before Jim was, you know, and I was like, well, he's hanging out with his buddy and they're having a good time. And fortunately I had the puppy with me. I didn't have Aria with me, but I did have the puppy. So, you know, I was able to kind of hang out with the puppy. So, you know, he and I, towards the end of the evening, Jim and Evans are in Evans's man cave talking, and the puppy and I are out in the yard just kind of playing. And then a couple of days later, we entertained Evans and his wife at the RV. And it was nice. You know, I did a steak. I did a sous vide tri-tip, in fact. And I had, you know, they bought a couple bottles of wine, and I had a cheese plate I put out and everything. And again, towards the end of the day, or the end of the evening, I was like, okay, I'm ready to be done now. So I'm like, and I told Jim, I was like, I like kind of being able to just hop on a Zoom call, and then when it's done, just hit the little red button and hang up. You know, there's no extended goodbyes. There's no feeling uncomfortable where, oh, you know, I want you to leave, but I can't exactly tell you to leave, you know, or be without being rude, you know. And I understand that, there's a balance. I mean, I know that we're not nice people, if you will. You know, we're not known for being, quote, nice, you know. And at the same time, there's a social acuity and there's a balance between being, all right, y'all need to fucking get out of my house and not.
You know how I do it? And people here in Tulsa know this about me. If you come to my house, now, if you show up at my house, first of all, odds are I'll know about it ahead of time. It'll be planned.
Yep.
And I'll have at least a little warning, and that'll be great. But, like, I'm thinking about, like, on holidays when all of my family is here. I love every one of those people. But after an afternoon with all those very intense personalities in my space, here's what is most often heard. I love you. Thank you so much for coming to see me. I invite you to go home now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, and they're like, okay, I guess that's our cue. And I say it with a smile on my face. I hug them bye, and I'm like, I invite you to leave now. Goodbye. And the first time I did it, my oldest son was like, what the hell, Mom? And I'm like, would you rather hear get the fuck out? He's like, well, no. I said, all right, then I invite you to go to your house. I love you. See you next time. And he's like, okay, yeah, that is better. And I said, you know, I am a flaming introvert. And,
yep,
you know, yeah. And I know, and it's not about whether you can be sociable or not. It's about how much energy does it cost you to be around other humans?
Mm-hmm.
Because extroverts, and I love how it works out. You know, we introverts, it costs us energy to be around others. Mm-hmm. And we refuel alone, but extroverts, it costs them energy to be alone and they refuel around others. Well, I know how they're doing it. They're sucking all of mine out of me. You know? And it's okay. I can recharge and I do, but I think there definitely comes a point when in community, in one-on-one, in small group, whatever, when you recognize you have reached your capacity to be who you are and feel good about that, then it's time for everybody to go or you to remove yourself. Mm-hmm. Because anything beyond that is detrimental to the relationships in place. Mm-hmm. You know? So, yeah. What is something you just won't live without? Not your dogs, not Jim.
Damn it. I was gonna say my dog.
Those are pretty obvious.
Those are givens.
Yeah. Yeah. But something else. What else is super important for you? And to add a little extra oomph to it. Is there an answer to that question for that is true for you that most other people, it is not true for?
Hmm.
So, you know, we're looking for that. What makes Charlene really unique?
Well, as far as things I couldn't live without, I would have to say, well, for one, internet, because of the connection, no pun intended, you know, just the ability to human in my own space, you know, the ability to connect with people in my own space, you know, and not have to go out to a bar or go, you know, or go out with, and then people go, it's too people-y outside. Right. And as far as things other people wouldn't necessarily think about, to go back to my cooking tools, I would have to say my knives. I've had those knives for like 10 years and I got them. They fit me really well. And I can make, even before I got the sous vide and the Instapot and the everything else, I made magic happen with the knives, you know, in my condo kitchen, you know, I made some mm-hmm. banging meals. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, I have to say,
don't want to do without your knives. I get that. Yeah. Because cooking is not that way for me. Mm-hmm. Having raised three kids as a single mom, and my kids are 6 years apart in age. So every freaking day dinner, I'm like, really? Seriously? This is a flaw in the plan. Why do we have to eat every day? You know, because they didn't like any of the same stuff. So it was almost like, if I wanted three happy faces, I had to make three different meals.
Oh, forget that. My mom would have put something on my plate and be like, you're eating it.
I know. And I tried to do that and in fact did that most of the time. And it also was a case of, you know, take the three lists of favorites, find the commonalities as much as possible. And what you end up with is a really short list of things to make for dinner that everybody will eat, which gets not only boring to eat real fast, but also incredibly boring to make real fast, which then led to the, why do we have to eat every day? why can't you take a pill? You know,
just drink your Soylent and be happy about it.
yeah. What I hated about cooking was the having to think up what everybody would eat 7 days a week. Summers were hell for multiple reasons, not least of which I had to do more than one meal a day and, you know, cause they were home all day. And now that they're all up and out, well, Lexi's back, but now that I'm no longer on the front line of having to be June Cleaver every day, I love cooking like Thanksgiving dinner, Christmas dinner, having people over. I love doing that. Birthday dinners. And I also, we've got to get back to it because COVID kind of blew it out the water. But I, for a while, I had started having what I call Sunday dinner at Mom's once a month with all everybody. And it was a command performance. And I'm like, look, you show up. I feed you, I get to see you, converse with you, spend time with you, hear about your life, and then I invite you to leave and go back home.
I invite you to leave. I and love that. I'm stealing it.
Yeah. And we do that once a month. And just the other day, Lexi said, hey, when are we doing that again? It's been a while and I like that. So that's a way that I get community with my core little unit of people that, you know, there's 10 of us, my three that I gave birth to, their spouses, and three grandkids. So that's one way I get community. I also get community the same way you do, mostly online. And I like the fact that, like you, that Zoom button click, bye, you know, when I'm done. And I do have some people here locally, you know, the people at the bar for karaoke on Friday nights. That's a thing now in my world. Shockingly, because even I'm still a little surprised that I do that on a weekly basis because it's very people-y in a bar.
Oh, yes.
But, yeah, but the things you can't live without, I could see where your knives, I imagine they represent a lot more than just cutting and cooking for you. You know, that's a skill
exactly.
that you have.
Yeah, it's a skill set.
It's part of your identity now.
Yeah. I mean, even when we first started dating and I was renting this room in this tiny ass little postage stamp sized kitchen. So Jim and I started dating in like June or July, summer 2011. And I didn't move into my condo until October of that year. So I was all kinds of enthusiastic. I didn't know what the hell I was doing.
Yeah.
But God damn it, I was going to do it. I was going to make me some, you know, I roasted duck in that little kitchen and I made me some like duck pho and like, you know, and pizza, duck, you know, duck flatbreads with arugula and goat cheese. And, you know, it's like, I didn't know what the hell I was doing, but I was going to figure it out. You know, what else did I do? I attempted a cooking blog. I think it's still out there somewhere. I don't remember. I did crostata, which is kind of like or gelat. That's what I'm thinking of. That's the thing where you have the pie crust and you have open face and you just kind of plop the filling in the middle and you fold it in a little bit and then you bake it. Yeah. So I started out with that. And then when I opened up, you know, I had the other kitchen, and that's the other thing I insisted on when it came to buying my house was a gas range.
Oh God, yes.
People are now like, oh, induction is all the rage. And I'm like, you can't roast a pepper or a freaking tortilla on an induction range. Forget that. I want flame, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
I like the control of gas too, because when you turn the burner off, it's off instead of cooling down.
Oh yes. Oh yeah.
Continuing to cook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and we, when I moved into Jim's place for, it was a rental, for about a year and a half. Well, cause I moved in August of 2016 and then we left March of 2019. Oh, 2 years. Crap, I can't remember now. Anyway, time flies when you're having fun or in love or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, he had an electric range. That thing sucked.
Oh, yeah. That might have been almost a deal breaker for me. I mean, It doesn't look so serious. It does not take much in the cooking realm to be like, I'm out. Nope. Nope.
I worked with it. Yeah. I didn't like it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a rental.
Yeah.
You know, he'd been living there for 10 years before, you know, before I came along, he was the master of the microwave meal. It was at 3 minutes or 3 minutes and 30 seconds, you know? And then when we were dating, I would send him home with leftovers. I'm like, here, take this chili home. Take this
perfectly congruent with his microwaving skills. Yay.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. I made sure it was something he could easily microwave. And then when I moved in and I was working late, because when I worked at the agency, they wanted me to work noon to nine, which is 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Pacific time. He would step up and he'd do dinner. He did salmon a lot of nights. He still does burgers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there he's definitely stepped it up in the cooking department. I still do the majority of the cooking, but you know, there are some things that he has taken over and I'm like, okay, you want to make burgers? Go for it.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you do for fun?
Train my dogs. That's fun for me.
Honey, I am not arguing that answer because I was sitting here thinking about asking it and I'm thinking, what? She's going to have an answer like I do to that. All the stuff I do all day long is what I do.
Exactly. I'm playing with my freaking crayons all day long.
Yeah.
Well, all day long yet, but it's coming.
Yeah.
You know, it's coming.
Okay. What's the best thing about being you, Charlene?
Oh, man. What isn't awesome about being me?
Okay, I'll take that.
I get to do what I want. I have a man that supports me and loves me unequivocally. And like you were saying before about not needing to work. I mean, like you were saying where you don't have to work because you don't want to. Quite frankly, as I get things off the ground and explore different things, different, you know, because the original idea was to get the SEO business, the web design business up and running in a couple of years, you know, and quite frankly, right now he's got a war chest that we're paying, from which we're paying a lot of the bills.
Mm-hmm.
And he supports me. I told him about pointy-eared wonder dogs. He's like, cool, let's go for it.
That's awesome.
And I get to travel. I get to avoid the cold weather. I can work from anywhere with a laptop and internet.
Yeah.
I've got.
Okay. So what's the worst thing?
Been 24/7.
What's the worst thing about being you?
I don't really have a worst. I mean,
that's great.
Honestly, since I've been doing this work, it's just, it is what it is. There's no good, bad. You know, there is what there is. And then there's, you know, 30, 60, 90. If there's something that I'm like, oh, this sucks, or oh, I stubbed my toe, or I'm like, I can look at that and go, oh, either I wasn't being present, or oh, I did this last night to cause this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, if I drink too much, but if I eat too much sugar or too many carbs and I feel like crap the next day,
cause and effect.
You know, I could say, oh, that's the worst. Oh, that's the worst. No, it's not the worst. It's, you know, it's, I did that to myself, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
It's just data from an experiment that I'd previously run.
I love it. I love it. I love all you guys in our group who, I think all of us kind of had a propensity for thinking in those terms already, because otherwise, you know, the group itself wouldn't have been attractive to any of us. But I love the fact that I get to spend time each week with people who look at their life through the lens of 100% ownership. And I have, as a result of that, discovered about myself that if I am prejudiced in any way, it is against people who don't own their shit. I really have
who blame
I really have a
others
hard
or circumstance.
Time. Yeah. I have a hard time tolerating and being patient and kind with people who whine and cry about the crap they do to themselves and don't see it as that. You know, want to holler about wanting to be in charge or change this or change that. Or
then fucking change it.
Yeah.
Then do it.
Yeah.
Don't bitch to me.
But they're all too often those folks, and I'm guilty of this on occasion, far less than ever before, thank God. But too often what they're hollering about is nothing they have control over anyway. So what are you wasting your breath for? When you're categorically ignoring what you do have control over, which is your damn self.
Two things.
Yeah.
You only have control over, actually, most of what you think about.
I call it four.
Oh, okay.
Most of what you think about, mm-hmm. all of what you say, all of what you do, and all of how you react to what you're, to what's outside you. So I need those four for the distinction. But you're right. It could be culled down to two, most of what you think and all of what you do. Because even
was it react or respond, though? I know I'm getting to the weeds a little bit.
For my purpose, it doesn't matter which word you use because I'm talking about the same thing.
Okay.
You know? Yes, you want to respond rather than react because respond connotes thought prior to action. But
not everybody thinks before they act.
No, that's true. And often, well, the word react means has a connotation of no thinking involved, just react, you know. But even in that, I'm still culpable for the ways in which I react, whether I've thought it through or not first. Doesn't matter. I'm still accountable for what I do and say in reaction as well as acting, you know.
Even if it's so, your programming that's reacting. Even if you're running a specific program.
Yeah. And I love that we use those kinds of analogies from, you know, our work. It makes it really easy for us to put that information in boxes we already understand when mm-hmm. we talk about it in terms of programs and code and things like that. But all right, look, I could talk to you all the rest of the day. And I know that your little one there is getting a little antsy.
Oh, you hear him?
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay.
I can, I was going to say I can have the husband take him out.
No. Okay. It's all right. We're all good. We need to wrap up anyway. So where are you headed next from Florida?
We're in Florida.
Oh,
we're
going to
stay in
there
Florida. We're staying there. And then we're going down to, right now we're on the Forgotten Coast. We're in a little tiny podunk town called Carabel. And then we're going down to Webster, Florida, which is halfway between
Tampa and Orlando.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. And that's where you're going to work with that woman.
Alicia Scholave, Refined Canine. And the thing is, the way she, multitasking here, the way she works, she is the only, she has a master's in applied behavioral analysis, and she's also going for her PhD in that.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I think at this point she's actually, I think she's got like one more thing to do, and then she's going to be considered an actual PhD candidate instead of a student,
right,
which is huge.
Right.
And she has worked with kids who have autism in the past,
mm-hmm.
and she's takes those ABA concepts and applies them to dog training, which is something that I frankly have not seen any other dog trainer do.
No kidding. That's cool. Well, I guess that means we're going to have another conversation down the road, Charlene.
Oh, yeah.
I got to hear about that.
We're not one and done. Oh, yeah. I'll. That's going to be something that's actually going to be part of Pointy-Eared Wonder Dogs as well.
Cool.
That's the other beautiful thing about it. That's why I started this, was really to not only get all of the knowledge that's in my head
out
that I already have, but also to chronicle my journey with him, because it's from what I understand and what I've seen in the dog world is that's a very unique perspective.
The way that she trains,
because the way that she trains is that she wants you to control your dog from a bond perspective and not a fear perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Not a, am I going to get yanked on, or am I, or even am I going to get a cookie if I sit, you know, using the, if you go towards the, and this is something I could talk about all day long, is the four quadrants, the positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement, positive punishment, negative punishment, mm-hmm. the operant conditioning quadrants. Mm-hmm. And basically she's teaching us how to think like our dog, to how to put ourselves in the dog's shoes. And then that just makes the bond even deeper.
Oh, yeah. We're definitely going to have to talk again. All right. All right. So I'm going to let you loose for today, though, darling. Thank you so much for coming
here. This is fun.
Having a talk with me. And I will make sure that people know how to find you in the show notes. And I look forward to doing this again. It was fun. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Anytime.
If you're hell-bent on wringing every last drop of awesome out of this life and the time you have here, I invite you to visit SuzanneSaysPodcast.com for more conversations and to subscribe. If you'd like to be a guest and have a conversation, email me at letstalk@SuzanneSaysPodcast.com. Thanks for listening.